Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I'm your host, Vincent Treewell. My special guest this evening is researcher and author Clay Van Diver. Clay is going to discuss something very interesting. We're going to be discussing a book from 1933 called The Werewolf in Lore and Legend by Montague Summers. It's a vintage book that covers worldwide lore and legend involving werewolves. Welcome aboard, Clay.
Thank you very much, Vincent. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I look forward to exploring this one-of-a-kind book.
Absolutely. I should mention, listeners, that Clay is a repeat guest and friend of the show. Please, let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be with you, Vincent. We've been on many paranormal journeys, both in podcast form and in paranormal explorations in Wisconsin, which I hope to repeat soon with you.
Oh, absolutely.
This book is really interesting. So the book is, once again, it's The Werewolf in Lore and Legend by Montague Summers. And this book, unlike any I've ever read on this subject matter, really, really explains what the werewolf legend is and what specifically lycanthropy is. And lycanthropy is the act of shifting into a wolf. And it demystifies a lot of preconceived notions of what the dog man is that we see in America. And after reading this book, I came away with a clear takeaway that lycanthropy is an act of ritual magic, and it is an act of, I don't think there is a way to do it the good way. I think it's an act of evil ritual magic. And that the dog men that we see in America aren't really some kind of cryptid creature, but they are really humans in shifted form who have conducted ritual magic, whether they be in Native American tribes or in covens. One really important thing to keep in mind is that people who are ignorant of the Skinwalker legend in the Navajo tribe, they think that it's like an honor to be a skinwalker, or like you are ascended if you can shift. But that's just not the case. In the Navajo culture, they're considered extreme outcasts. And
you've kind of descended, you know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And the Navajo people are terrified of skinwalkers, and they do everything in their daily lives to remove any possibility that skinwalkers can enter their dreams or affect their lives in any way. So, you know, even in Navajo culture, it's known that these are evil creatures, and that they, like, in order to be a skinwalker in Navajo culture, you have to do unspeakable acts, which we can get into in this book.
Absolutely. Even in a non-Judeo-Christian concept, they pretty much, it's similar to selling your soul to the devil.
Absolutely. And I even have the specific name of a demon that I think that lycanthropy involves.
Okay.
So yes, you have to make a deal with this demon. You have to go through a stage of initiation and servitude to this demon and prove yourself through evil acts in order to get the I don't know what the right word is, the tools, I guess, to become, to be able to engage in lycanthropy.
And I can't cite the source, but there was a white American anthropologist who spent like 30 years with the Navajo and developed some real deep ties. And after like literally 30 years, they said, okay, well, we're going to let you in on this. We're going to tell you how it really works. We don't talk about this, okay? But you have to kill a family member. And, I mean, that's one of the things. You have to do a bunch of things, but one of them is you have to kill an immediate family member that you love. to get this. That is what I have gleaned.
Yeah, absolutely. That certainly sounds like something that is required of lycanthropy. I've heard other even worse things that the
Damn, worse than that. Required. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, and for this as well, but you know, Montague Summers doesn't really get into too much of that, but you get the idea from some of the stuff we'll go into of what is required.
Sure. Okay. We kind of extended there, but yeah, go ahead with the entomology of the werewolf.
Sure. Where the word comes from. Yeah, so it really stems from the Roman word lupus, which for lack of a better term means prostitute. And lupine, and so that's kind of where the word loop comes from. And the word loop is really important because in French, a werewolf is called loup garou or loup garav. And there is in Greece, let me go down to my notes here. There's a very similar word, and this is where lycanthropy comes from. And that is, sorry, hold on here. It was King Lycoan, Lycoan. And that it's very similar to lupus. And what's really interesting, Lycoan is the similarity to Loki, the god, the Norse god Loki, who is also a shifter. And there's also a form. I've been researching this. I need to do a bit more research on this, but there is an author mentioned in the book who's researching gods of Mesopotamia, like dark gods like Moloch and Baal, and there's a form of Baal that is named Baal Luoki, Luoki. So there's something to this word that I would argue that goes back to Mesopotamia. And that's kind of where this comes from. And it makes total sense because Moloch is ultimately the god that most of the people in the cabal and in dark arts worship, ultimately. So it makes sense that it has Mesopotamian roots. And getting into outside of the lupus etymology, there is just werewolf itself, and this stems from varwolf, or warwolf, like a warlock. And it also, the word were in werewolf means beware, so beware of the wolf. So yeah, there's some really interesting etymology there. But ultimately, you know, the etymology of lupus in relation to Lycoan, the Greek king, to me is really interesting.
Yes. Well, I was just looking up lupus, the disease, and seeing if there was some connection, because it seems very strange that the name for a wolf and the name for this king and the name for this fatal disease would all be the same.
Yeah.
It's
pretty interesting.
Yeah, let's see. Is that the same as blood cancer? I'm not 100%.
I'm not too sure what lupus is, to be honest with you. I think it's a blood disease.
Yes, which, you know, kind of begs the question. You know, it's related to blood. And okay, lupus, a chronic inflammatory disease, occurs when an individual's immune system attacks its own tissues and organs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Inflammation caused by lupus can affect the joints, skin, kidneys, blood cells, brain, heart, and lungs. Okay. I'll just leave that hang out there for what it's worth. But yes,
yeah.
That affects almost the entire body and all its systems.
Yeah.
Much like, and I'm stretching it, but much like shape shifting.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that certainly makes sense.
Wow. I noticed that in the notes that I have from you, this is just a worldwide legend. Like, there's few cultures, if any, that don't have werewolf legends.
Oh, absolutely. I would argue that the only thing that is different in cultures is what animal is being shifted. Most commonly in Europe, and even in Asia, it's a wolf, but it can often be in Africa, it can be a hyena, it
Oh,
can
wow.
be a jaguar in South America. But yeah, it is definitely, without question, a universal legend. I don't think you can find a culture that does not have a shifter legend in it of
Which,
some kind.
yeah, which to me, if everybody in the world basically has a legend about this, that then there's some reality to it. It's not just a campfire story somebody made up. That would apply in one culture. That wouldn't be all over the world amongst unrelated people. No,
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that adds a lot of weight to me that this is a real phenomena that actually occurs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, the similar names of this creature tells you that it's real as well, because, correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't have time to get into the research of this because it doesn't appear in the book, but isn't there a tribe in Wisconsin that has a name very similar to King Lycoen for the werewolf? Like, it's called a Lycus or something. Their dog man, it's like Lycus. I remember hearing that in Linda Godfrey, either in her book or in a documentary.
That I unfortunately can neither confirm nor deny. It sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't really say.
Sure. I'll have to verify that, but
it
I
wouldn't
do remember
surprise
hearing
me. I know the Ho-Chunk people around Devil's Lake believed that there was a panther-like creature that came out of the lake and could appear as a man and could take people into the lake and eat them, kill them,
Wow.
And that's what I
That's
know about that. Yeah.
that's really interesting, especially in all the sightings of that supposed Black Panther up there. That's really interesting.
Yes, that is. You mentioned the dog man and, its prevalence around America. And I think your idea about ritual magic is dead on, because that thing couldn't have evolved. There is no scenario where you have an upright walking canine. That
No.
doesn't make any
No.
sense. It took humans coming down from the trees, and we have reasons to walk upright. Dogs don't really have any reason to walk upright, nor to somehow develop a almost perfectly humanoid body. And, that just doesn't work like that.
Oh, absolutely. And if I may make one comment on the upright walking version of dog, what we know as dog man, because dog man is a little different than a werewolf. They're the same thing, but when people see dog man, it's usually upright walking. And the Odawa tribe of Michigan has a really interesting thought on that. And they say that the reason it's walking upright and not on all fours is because it's in the middle, it's in a stuck position in the shift, that it's between man and wolf, so that it can only walk as a wolf. So most of the werewolf legends, most of them around the world, consist of people who are shifted walking on all fours. Now,
they've gone all the way and become a huge wolf. Yeah,
exactly. But there are certain, there is one culture that I think it was the Norse, where they saw them upright walking or something, but for the most part, they're seen as wolves and they're revealed. What's really interesting, the way they're revealed in all these European legends, is if an arm is cut off or a leg is cut off, the shift stops instantly and they become human. And if they are tracked with hunting dogs, they find a human in the position where the wolf should be the next day, and they usually have wounds on the very same spot where they were struck.
Wow. That is fascinating.
Yep.
It makes a lot of sense that the transformation, if complete, would be into a four quadruped, because it's just a lot more practical for a canine to be on all fours.
Rather than absolutely.
Some kind of weird walking upright thing. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. And
no,
some of the more out there theories that this was created in a government lab, I'm sorry, I'm going to dismiss those right now, because one, all the legends predate that by centuries. And it's usually considered a military lab created this. But you never have anybody come forward and say, yeah, I took care of the puppies. Okay. they have to grow. You know what I mean? You
no.
You have, just have an adult. You'd have to raise them. And
yeah.
We already have elite troops and stuff. What, are we going to add some wild animals? How is that going to help the war? You know, that's going to be chaotic, and they're probably going to attack their own people. You know, it's no, that's dumb. That would not happen like that.
Yes.
I feel we can solidly say that.
We can absolutely solidly say that. Now, however, you bring up a very interesting point that I want to get to, which is that certainly, no, they're not created in a government lab. There's some very weird stories of people saying that they encountered a dogman, they were approached by the military. I'm not going to get into those, but what I will get into, which is mentioned in this book, which is fascinating to me, is that there were two very well-known werewolves in France that, instead of being punished, because the typical punishment for a werewolf was to be burned. They said burned quickly, but I don't know if that was always the case. And this was, of course, being burned alive, which is totally cruel.
Wow.
But that was the punishment. So there was two werewolves. Let me go to my notes here, because I think I want to read the stories for this.
Certainly.
There were two werewolves. One was named Jean Grenier, and I can't remember the name of the other one, but they were caught being werewolves, and instead of being killed, they were sent to a convent for the mentally ill. And the question becomes, why? And I think the Catholic Church, and which was, of course, a representative of what we would call, I guess, the cabal or the deep state at the time, was trying to research them.
Wow.
Yeah, let me... sorry, I'm looking through lot of notes here of specific pages. Interesting. I think it's under interesting facts. Okay, cool. I have it. Okay. Page 231. Let me pull it up real quick. Thank you for the audience for bearing with me. I feel like it's better to read this. So, okay, let's go to 234. Okay, here's a story. A youth named Pierre de la Tillare, who lived at Saint Antoine, one evening took him into the depths of the wood and brought him into the presence of the Lord of the... Oh, wait, no, that's something I will get into.
Certainly.
Let's see. Okay.
Take your time. It's a fascinating subject. Yeah, we want to hear all about it.
Okay. Okay, so this was this was Jean Grenet. He was a werewolf. He was a youth, so he was under 18 at the time, and he was relegated to the Parliament of Bordeaux. And on 6 September 1608, President Dassus, I guess this was the president of the Bordeaux region of France, pronounced sentence upon the loup-garou. The utmost clemency was shown, taking into consideration his youth and extreme ignorance. Jean Grenier was ordered to be straitly enclosed in the Franciscan friary of Saint Michael the Archangel, a house of the stricter observance at Bordeaux, being warned that any attempt to escape would be punished by the gallows without hope of remission or stay.
Oh.
So Pierre de Lancret, who has left us a very ample account of the whole case, visited the loup-garou at St. Michael's in the year 1610 and found that he was a lean and gaunt lad with small, deep-set black eyes that glared fiercely. He had long, sharp teeth, some of which were white like fangs, others black and broken, while his hands were almost like claws with horrid, crooked nails.
Oh.
One other interesting note on Grenier is de Lancret calls attention to the fact that Grenier or Garnier seems for some reason to be a name not infrequently borne by werewolves. So yeah, Jean Grenier was basically, I think he was part of a werewolf family. And he had actually been charged with killing kids. So this was not just somebody that just, oh, shifted one day. No, this was somebody who was accused of folks of Bordeaux of meeting with this gentleman or this demon called the Lord of the Forest and doing unspeakable acts, shifting into a werewolf, killing children, and yet he was spared by the church. This makes no sense to me. So it is my contention that Jean Grenier was studied by the church. The noble side of you would think they were studying it to study demonic possession and what a demon was, but then
How we could cure it
the realistic side of me thinks they
type
were
of thing.
studying it for more nefarious purposes.
Just kind of reverse engineer it and see how we can make this happen.
So there was Jean Grenet, and there was somebody else who was also sent to a convent, and I don't know who that is, but he was not the only one, which is very interesting.
Yes, indeed. Before we get back on program, let me just ask you this, and there's no right or wrong answer, but in your research, did you find any female werewolves?
Yes,
Oh, okay.
absolutely. And in fact, what was really interesting is they were often older ladies. Age doesn't matter. That's one thing that's really interesting is you would think that the older you get, the less virile of a werewolf you are. But there was the story of in England of an old church lady who was a werewolf. And she was like known as this sweet old lady in her village. And then all of a sudden they found out she was a werewolf and she was killing people in the village. I mean,
My
it's so,
God.
yes, to answer your question, absolutely. It's male or female.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Wow. Well, please, continue. Let's see, where were we? I think, were you going to talk about Slavic lore?
Yes. So Slavic lore is really interesting in that. Let me go to my notes here. So the Slavic people believe that when a werewolf died, it would become a vampire in death. And I think that is fascinating
Oh.
because it speaks to the fact of demonic servitude, right? Like if you are a werewolf and you serve a demon, what happens to you when you die? And it's my contention that I'm a firm believer in reincarnation. So what I think happens when
As am
somebody
I.
makes a deal with a demonic entity, which I also believe is real, is that you're trapped on the earth forever. You cannot escape reincarnation. And this explanation of a werewolf becoming a vampire in death makes perfect sense to me. Like, you do all these demonic acts, you are an evil creature, you have the ability to shift, and for your servitude, you are rewarded, but it's a sick kind of reward. You become a vampire in death. Now, again, I don't know if vampires exist, but that's a really interesting explanation for them, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It certainly is. Wow. I've heard multiple theories of what vampires might be if you grant that they're actual physical beings, which I don't have a firm position on, though I do know that it's, again, a nigh universal legend. And it seems strange people would have a legend all over the world about something that never happened, you know?
Exactly.
The two explanations that come to mind, one is that, yes, it's a person who's died, but somehow still, it was, well, the undead, you know, that they're dead, but they can still walk around and do things, and they need infusions of blood to continue to simulate life. The other is that they're a corpse that is animated by a demon, and that they're kind of decaying as they're going around. They don't live forever because they eventually rot away, but
That's
that
interesting.
a demon like has can take their physical body for a good long time. And both of those seem very interesting. Yeah. You know, then there was a guy who did some research and believed that there were some people who were human, but had very vampire, who were kind of natural vampires. And they weren't dead, they were alive, but they were nocturnal. They didn't turn to dust in the sunlight, but they just really didn't like the sunlight. And they would live for extended periods, like a couple of hundred years, and that they had abilities that normal people didn't have. He did a lot of research in Wisconsin, actually, and he claimed to have interviewed multiple such natural vampires. So that's a
Really? So like
yes.
they were a race like the Neanderthals or we were, but they were a
Yeah.
separate kind of human. That's fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. That's, I guess,
That is
exactly the right way to put it.
fascinating.
Yeah. And they didn't need other people's blood to live, but a lot of them really liked it. It was like a thing they did. And but that they tended to get willing people, which there is a subculture that's totally into that. And you know, those people don't live for 300 years and have special abilities. But some of them think they do, and that we know exists. The people who sleep in coffins and dress a certain way, and you know, do blood games and things. That so the idea that if there were such people, they would find a, you know, what they call them, familiars, or you know, the people who work for them that would give them their blood willingly doesn't seem unrealistic to me at all. It seems like that'd be the easy part, you know.
Well, that's an you pose an interesting question is like the Lord of the Forest that I just mentioned, who we'll get into, is that really one of these humans that lives longer than us, is nocturnal, so it's less exposed to the sun, which is probably why it lives longer. And these humans just created familiars to do their dirty work, and they found these secrets of nature that they're basically imparting upon humans. As
Wow.
another,
Yes, that is a deep way to look at it. Yes. It
Okay, yeah, I mean that
might
can be a,
not be a demon. It might just be an evil
it
person.
very well could be. It very well could be. And I, speaking to that theory just real quickly, so we're not going too off topic, is I have heard a theory, and I'm sure you have too, that there were people who survived Atlantis who figured out through science, not through natural means, not through like a spring or anything like that that would be of God, but they figured out how to be immortal in using Atlantean high technology. And one of the results or the side effects of that was vampirism. They couldn't be out in the sun. They had to live at night. And that's what they're immortal because of that high science, but the results were catastrophic for the way they had to exist.
Wow, that is fascinating. I had not heard it applied to vampires, but yes, I have a lot of Atlantean high tech being perceived as magic or as godlike activity. Yeah, I absolutely believe that we have some memories from a pre highly advanced civilization that was wiped out. And people remember a lot of the legends, and this is particularly what I believe about the Nephilim, that I don't believe that they're literally angels having sex with human women. Maybe I just don't have enough faith for that, but that just doesn't seem like that would work out. And if you have, I don't know how you'd get a human giant out of that. It seems to me like a memory of a time when they did a lot of genetic engineering and their society could do that. And they created all these hybrids like centaurs and satyrs and all those things. And those were all real at the time, but they were the result of genetic manipulation, which we're not too far away from being able to do that.
Yeah, that very well could be the case, and I certainly don't rule that out.
And then if your society collapses and you end up with a like hunter-gatherer or like a society of shepherds and stuff, they're not gonna know about DNA and gene splicing and all that. They just remember these things used to exist, and that's because the angels had sex with women. That's what happened. It's an explanation because they don't know any of the science anymore. And that makes sense to me,
Absolutely. So just real quick, I found the other gentleman. He
Oh,
was a
great.
youth also who was sent to a convent. His name was Jacques Roulet, and it was in the year 1598, which is really important because in France, in the Bordeaux region, there was a massive outbreak of werewolfism from in the late 1590s. And so he confessed to having attacked and devoured with his teeth and nails many children in various parts of the country whither he had roamed. As to his guilt, there could be no question, since he gave precise details, the exact time and place where a few days before near Beaumont he had found the mutilated body of a child whom he swore he had throttled and then eaten in as part of the wolf. He confessed to attendance at the sabbat. This varlet was justly condemned to death. But for some inexplicable reason, the Parliament of Paris decided that he should ra be rather confined in the hospital of Saint-Germain-des-Prés, where at any rate he would be instructed in the faith and fear of God. So this is another example of somebody being put in a convent, which again makes utterly no sense in this narrative unless they were trying to study it.
Yes, exactly. He's a confessed serial killer. And
Exactly,
we're going to
exactly.
just send him to the monastery and make him a good person.
Yeah,
That doesn't
it
that sounds ridiculous.
does
They
not make
kill
any
people for
sense.
like theft, you know.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's fascinating having those like 1500, 1600, 1700s records that a lot of this stuff is documented,
Oh, I know. It's
officially.
fascinating. It's fascinating. And one thing is clear, these people, th these were, this is thought of as history. These people believed it. This wasn't like they were,
Oh
going
no, this
to
isn't
a
the Universal
fantasy
Wolfman.
bookshop.
No.
No, they
These are
believed
government
it.
records.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, did you want to pick up with Let's see, maybe Werewolves in Britain.
Yeah, so Werewolves in Britain, a couple really interesting things. This is what there were parts of this book where the hairs in the back of my neck stood up. This was one of them. So on page 184, they talk about werewolves swarming in, of all places, Arden and Sherwood. And as you and I know as researchers, anywhere, anytime the like, or not any time, but the Sherwood Forest, wherever it's located in America, is often a site of ritual acts. Like an example would be the where the West Memphis Three kids, where those kids were killed, was in the Sherwood Forest. There was a Sherwood Forest that was associated with multiple times with the Smiley Face killers. And I won't get into it too much here, but you're aware of it. We have to keep it off the grid for obvious reasons, because we don't want people going and flocking there. But Recluse and I, from the farm, have researched Arden extensively, and there's definitely something going on with that.
I know you guys have a project on that, yes.
We do, yeah. We're keeping it off the grid, because
Oh,
we don't want a lot of people to be swarming that area. But yeah, so in Sherwood and Arden, which is in the Welsh part of England, which is interesting in and of itself, because the Welsh people were steeped in lore of werewolves, and also in fae culture. So in Wales, there in what that's really interesting too, in Wales there's references to shifting hares, people shifting into rabbits.
Yes, go ahead. I've heard of one of these.
And I don't have a sp there are specific stories in the book, but I don't want to go off track. One thing I do want to read, page 205. There's a story of a race of werewolves in Ireland, like an
Wow.
entire race of them. So I'm going to read this. This is
Please.
really fascinating. Let me open a 205 here.
I've heard of the Were-Hare from 14 Times, the British magazine.
Oh, nice.
And they're talking about an older lady. Well, everybody's chasing this big rabbit, and the rabbit disappears. And they go to this lady's house where they last saw it, and she's laying there just exhausted from running.
I
She's
think
clearly
that's the one I
her,
read. Yeah, I think I read
coincidentally,
that
yeah, she
one.
was a rabbit a minute ago.
Okay, so an old Irish legend, which is given in Kongsguðsjá Speculum Regi, a Norse book compiled about 1250, runs as follows. There is also in that land, in parentheses, Ireland, one wonderful thing which will seem very untruthful to men. Yet the people who inhabit that land say that it is certainly true, and that befell on account of the wrath of a holy man. It is said that when the holy Patricius was preaching Christianity in that land, there was one great race more hostile to him than the other people that were in the land, and these men tried to do him many kinds of injury. And when he preached Christianity to them as to other men, and came to meet them when they were holding their assembly, then they took this counsel to howl at him like wolves. But when he saw that his message would succeed little with these people, then he became very wroth and prayed God that he might avenge it on them by some judgment, that their descendants might forever remember their disobedience. And great punishment and fit and very wonderful has since befallen their descendants, for it is said that all men who come from that race are always wolves at a certain time, and run into the woods and take food like wolves.
Wow.
So that was really interesting.
Yes.
And then there is an area called Ossory, Ossory, that the children of the wolf in Ossory could transform themselves and go abroad to devour people. And that's from the Book of Ballymote, a miscellaneous collection of folk tales of the area. So, yeah, again, just steeped in the legend. You have the hair shifting over there, and then you have that story in Ireland, and then the land of Ossory, which all is very interesting.
Yes. And whether you accept that it's a punishment from God because they disrespected a saint, or maybe it's an explanation for something that was already going on,
Oh, well,
you know,
I think it is. I what
yeah.
I think happened is, typical like Catholic churches, they said it was in that he cursed them, and caused them to be werewolves, but really I think they were werewolves, because why would they howl at him first? And
Exactly. They're
then
showing
he
wolf-like behavior before.
exactly. So that was the Catholic Church's way of putting a divine spin on it,
Yes.
through legend.
Neither first nor last. Yes.
So that was really interesting.
Did you want to pick up with werewolves in Russia, Germany, and Norway?
And so regarding Norway, in Scandinavia, the berserkers, who were like their top warriors, like they would go, they'd be in the front lines. That's where the term berserk comes from. And they were said to be able to transform into bears. And
Yes.
there was a legend of them being used in battle and how they scared the hell out of an enemy by transforming into bears. There is a Siberian skinwalker legend, which I'm going to read real quick.
Certainly.
248. Okay, so the Yakuts of Siberia believe that every shaman is a past master in shapeshifting, and moreover, he keeps his soul or one of his souls incarnate in some animal mysteriously concealed where none may find it. Like, how fascinating is that? So it's basically saying
Yes.
that the shaman is a reincarnation of a shifter, and that he keeps his soul or one of his souls, as if he can control his past incarnations, in an animal, which I
That it
find
is, yes,
truly
it's amazing.
fascinating. So that's really interesting. Now, here's another interesting one. The Kamchatkans, which I think are another Siberian tribe, fear the whale, the bear, and the wolf, whose names must never be mentioned when they are seen, for they understand human speech. They are warlocks in disguise. This one blew my mind, because if it were just the wolf, or if it just said bears, I would think nothing of it. But the fact that they mention whales with them, who we know to be highly intelligent,
Oh, yes.
puts a whole new spin on that. So basically, they believe that wolves and bears and whales could understand human speech. Like, that is fascinating.
Yes, yes, it is.
And it just, it makes you wonder, like, about nature. Like, we know so little. Maybe that's true in a way,
I would not be surprised. Obviously, I would be surprised, but no, it wouldn't totally shock me if that was completely true. You know, especially the whales. We can pretty much say the whales, that's probably true. The bears and wolves we tend to underestimate, but or that's our opinion. You know, we don't know what their experience of life is, you know. There's a very fascinating book, and I'm just going to digress a moment because it's one of my all-time favorites, and it makes a lot of sense to me. It's by Barbara Ehrenreich, and it's called Blood Rites. Rites being RITES.
TES.
And it essentially explains religion and war through the lens of early humans worshipped major predators.
Interesting.
The apex predators, before we had steel and guns and anything, where we were chipping, you know, stone tools, we worshipped the apex predators. and we were sometimes their prey, and they were gods to us. And she cites so many different kinds all around the world. It's universal. And one of the earliest, well, if I'm correct, if I recall correctly, the earliest documented religion was bear worship in Europe. Uh-huh. And the reason we worship them was because, A, they could kill us anytime they wanted. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing we could do about it. And now, now those are endangered species because we developed weapons of iron and, you know, mm-hmm. guns, and we can, they're lucky to be alive. But yeah. that totally reversed what used to be. We used to be their prey, and they used to just prey on us as they wished. And there was nothing we could do about it. Also, though, they preyed on other things. And mm-hmm. we barely developed humans had to be their scavengers and feed on what they left behind. Mm-hmm. And that helped us get a lot of protein and, you know, get a lot of calories and live and develop. And yeah. so we were dependent on them. And so, like, we had to follow them. And she documents this and how that led to various ideas of the gods and everything. And it's absolutely fascinating book. Blood wow. Rites. I can't recommend it enough.
Okay. Yeah. You got to text me that because I that's like, yeah, that's on my reading list for sure.
Oh, it's a gem. No problem. Yeah. Yes, I digress. Where were we here?
So, yeah, we were talking about werewolves in Scandinavia, Russia, Germany. Yes, yes. So here's an interesting thing. So in Norway, they put on a wolf shirt, apparently, to be able to shift. And in France, there's all kinds of legends about putting on a wolf girdle or a wolf belt of wolf fur. So let me read from page 244. There were two king's sons, spellbound skin changers, and above them on the wall hung two wolf shirts. Now it was the 10th day, and on that day alone were they released from the spell, and they might come out of their skins. So sorry, I read the end part. They had already shifted, but they use wolf shirts to be able to shift. So I'll go to another part. The name for a wolf shirt, which affected the metamorphosis to a wolf, was Ulfahamr, Ulfahamr. So they would put on these wolf shirts, these Ulfahamrs, and they would be able to shift. And I find that really interesting. Like if this was just a bullshit legend, how come that you have to wear a girdle in one area and a shirt in the other, if it were just something people made up, you know what I mean?
Like, yes. Yes.
There's just something
oddly specific. Yeah,
exactly. It's oddly specific. And on that note, do you mind if I go into, and we'll get into werewolves in Greece and Rome, but I want to go into what it takes to shift, what is required for lycanthropy. So you have the werewolf shirts in Norway, and in France and Germany, you have a werewolf belt. It's also said that you can wear a werewolf skin and shift. So basically, the process of lycanthropy involves a couple things. From my research here, it basically, you have to do a couple things. You have to engage the what's called the Lord of the Forest. It was referenced to Lord of the Forest, which is really interesting because werewolfism in Greece primarily took place in Arcadia, which is where Pan lived. Mm-hmm. And Pan is also known as the Lord of the Forest. So I find that really interesting. So you had to make a deal with this I don't think of Pan really as a demon, though. But basically, the way the legend is communicated in France...
Just interrupt for a second. I would say the church would probably consider any pagan deity to be a demon.
I would think so.
The crossover is almost complete, but go ahead.
Yes. So you had to make a deal with an entity. We'll call this entity the Lord of the Forest, and I'll reveal his name in a second. You had to do unspeakable acts. And in doing these unspeakable acts, once you've proven yourselves, you would be given the tools to become a werewolf. And that was a salve, some kind of grease that you would put on your body, rub it all over your body, and then either a girdle or a wolf skin, and most typically under a full moon. And this would allow you to shift. Now, I'm gonna get a little heavy here, but this is just what's been communicated in this book. This salve was made from the fat of children.
Wow.
Now there's talks of it being made from the fat of children, and I'm sorry, this is just what it says, and I'm communicating
No,
it because
feel
I
free.
want to
That's.
communicate that I do think this is an evil act.
Oh, yes.
So it was made of the fat of a children who was either dug up from a grave or that was killed in a ritual sacrifice. So this salve is an evil potion, if you will. And the act of putting it on assumes that evil act through the process of making it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And
And the sacrifice of children was in the Bible, the big rap up against followers of Moloch, that
Exactly,
they
exactly.
sacrificed children. That was, yeah. A lot of these pagan deities, I mean, just they're not benign pagan deities.
No,
They want human sacrifice.
no. And I think if I were to argue what demons are, other than, just evil creatures, I think that they feed off this, the life energy of these sacrifices. And that's kind of where they fit in our spiritual ecosystem. So you have to go through an initiation process. You have to make the salve. You have to help make the salve. Sometimes it's said they're given the salve, but I doubt that in all cases, though, they're given the wolf skin. I do think that you have to actually make the salve. So there's a variation to this in that it is said that there were some pools of water that people could go to on a full moon and strip down naked, and then the Lord of the Forest would provide a wolf skin. But again, even in that case, it provided stripping down naked and communicating with the Lord of the Forest. So it shows that that Lord of the
You may have to make a
Forest,
different kind of sacrifice.
exactly. Now there's a really interesting, almost comical story of a Roman soldier communicated by this author Apuleius, who was a slave, was traveling from his master's house to like another farm to buy something for the plantation. And he walked with a Roman soldier, and he said the soldier stripped naked, put his clothes down, and urinated in a circle, and that caused him to shift. But that was a one-off story that wasn't really echoed anywhere else. Yeah, let me
And that probably wouldn't be the full ritual. That'd be like the thing he can do to make it easier. Because he's already gone through
exactly.
the initiation and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to go to this character Moiset. This is, I think, the demon who's known as the Lord of the Forest. And that's on page 223. So and this is a guy named Pierre Bourgeot, known as Gros Pierre, and he was tried before Maître Jean Bouin, prior to the Dominican convent, and Inquisitor General for the Diocese of Besançon. Pierre Bourgeot confessed that 19 years before, he met a demon riding in black, clothed in black, riding black steeds. And then basically the demon made a deal with this shepherd. He said he was f fearful of his flock, and the demon promised him that he would take care of his flock if he would serve him as Lord and Master. So this guy Pierre Bourgeot accepted, and it was in the middle of a rainstorm. He was losing his flock. He was broke, destitute, whatever.
And the man in black shows up.
So he swore to this demon to never assist at Holy Mass nor use holy water, which was that part was probably made up by the Catholic Church. He then kissed the demon's left hand, which was black and cold as the hand of a corpse. And this story is this is repeated a couple times. The demon was the color black, not as if he was African American, but black. And that
Yes, kind
his
of like
breath
Washington
was.
Irving has a story about that where he's just like the absence of light. Like
Exactly.
it
Exactly.
has nothing to do with physical race. He just, there's no light in him.
Exactly. So he is, his breath is as cold as a corpse. The demon promised Pierre money and bade the shepherd call upon him by the name of Moisette. So I think Moisette is the name of this demonic entity in the forest. And then there's another story of a meeting. Like there's this, the Lord of the Forest. So there's this guy, Gilles Garnier, another Garnier. The werewolf was a solitary. He took to himself a wife, and then unable to find food to support his family, fell upon such evil and impious courses that while wandering about one evening through the woods, he made a pact with a phantom or spectral man whom he encountered in some remote and haunted spot. And okay, so he agreed to a deal with his demon, and to this he agreed and received an unguent or salve wherewith he anointed himself when he went about to shift his shape. He died very penitent, having made full confessions of his crimes. So another story about the salve. So
And
yeah,
again,
basically.
why would people confess to something that didn't ever happen? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
And not once or
Exactly.
twice, but a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, and you have this same story repeated over and over again of somebody meeting this dark spectral figure in the forest, them swearing allegiance to him, doing unspeakable acts, and in return they get the tools to become werewolf, basically.
I'm thinking when the whole darkness thing, I'm thinking of shadow people and how apparently common phenomena that is that people see these beings that are just darkness in humanoid form. And that's something that people see today frequently.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, they may have been more open in the past. As a theory, I have that a lot of the things that are paranormal now, there may be a specific reason for that. And that back in medieval times, they may have been a lot less paranormal. Like they just showed up and they were completely as real as a table sitting right here. You know, that I think things may have been different. And, you know, without getting too far into it, because I've talked about it in the past, but the if you believe at any level that there are secret chiefs or people who beings that are somewhat in charge of humanity's progress, that they dimmed that down, that they made the spiritual or etheric or what have you become less prevalent and become paranormal instead of just day-to-day normal. And so that science and technology could advance, then that makes a lot of sense that it was completely just normal and real in that era. And I think that might have happened, you know.
Yeah,
But,
it very well could be.
you know,
Absolutely.
and that might be what they're dealing with. As far as shadow people, in all my research, the only time I got really freaked out was God, now his name not great. Now I'm gonna blank on his name. Another researcher had a guest who had shadow people in his house as a child and communicated with them, and they taught him a magical system. And I'm like, okay, I don't want that trouble. I'm backing away from that too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
But yes.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we've gone a bit far afield. Please continue where we were here.
Yeah, so yeah, basically I was, summing up the process of lycanthropy,
Yes.
the process of shifting. I'll just go through quick bullet points of like the characteristics of lycanthropy now.
Yes, sure.
So the eyes are often hot and dry. They don't shed tears. Werewolves are said to be able to strike someone dumb and keep them paralyzed. So they would just paralyze you with fear or thought. So they're often said to be what shifting is, and this is said multiple times in the book. It's apparently a soul transfer from a human to a wolf. And what's really interesting is that, while there are stories of people who were in wolf form and they had a severed hand or a severed leg from either a dog or a hunter or a posse, and they were instantly shifted. There's also stories of people who would dream, go to sleep, and then the wolf would be prowling while they were sleeping. So, or they would go into a state where they would shift, but it wouldn't be like they would, sh their skin would change to a wolf. Their soul would be transferred into a wolf that was next to them. So it's really interesting. And Eliphas Levi, the French occult writer, said that men who are werewolves are really having them in their dreams. And I thought that was really interesting, that
Yes.
correlation. So
Kind of an out-of-body experience where you enter into the body of this
it
animal
exactly
and
exactly
then you run amok as this animal.
yep
But it's
yep
you controlling the animal. You're almost like possessing it.
It's like a video possession video game
Yes,
almost.
yes,
Yeah.
yes. Wow. That's
So
interesting.
werewolves are said to have no tail. They are exposed in shifts by showing ears that don't look right, paws that don't look right. Sometimes it is said that they have more human-looking paws. So you should, the idea is, and this is repeated in the Dogman legend often, you should see characteristics in a werewolf that shows you it's not a wolf. And that could be the ears, that could be the no tail, it could be the paws looking different, something like that. Now here's something very interesting, and this was repeated a couple times. I think this is comical too, but it's interesting. Werewolves were said to be identified in their human form by having a unibrow, which I gotta read this. Let me go to page
Please.
118. I think that
No
it's mentioned.
offense to any listeners.
Oh, I know, and I'm not, of
It
course not.
is comical. Go
So,
ahead.
okay. Among the Danes, it was said that if the eyebrows met so as to form a bar across the brow, this signified the man was a werewolf. And then I'm going to go to page 192. Okay. So, okay. A shepherd who is then accompanying a lonely hut, occupying a lonely hut in a remoter tract of Invernessshire, so this is in England, a man described to me as possessing unusually piercing eyes and heavy brows, which met so as almost to form an arch bar across the forehead, was commonly reputed to be a werewolf, and certainly the evidence seemed conclusive on this point. So there was a story previous to this, but this is the part where they're mentioning in Invernessshire there's a man who had a unibrow, and they thought he was a werewolf because of that. So I found that fascinating. No disrespect to people with unibrows. Much love to you. So Vincent, I'm going to really trip you out here, okay?
Okay,
Because this is
hit me.
personal to you and I, okay? There is a werewolf call that is described that is sounds exactly like the werewolf recording that you and I play on Recluse's show
Yes.
from
Go ahead.
Scotland.
Oh
Okay,
my
are you
God.
ready for
Yes. Oh,
this?
I'm familiar.
The
Please hit it.
hairs went up on the back of my neck when I heard this one, man. And I did not, honestly, I went in here fully objectively, not expecting to hear this, and this one jumped out at me. Okay. So they ran about country lanes. This is werewolves in this is in Portugal. They run about country lanes, but at the least glimmer of a light, they gallop off at full tilt into the kindly darkness. If they prowl near a cottage, they utter long howls and a kind of sobbing noise, which is taking to be an entreaty for the candle or lamp to be promptly doused. Tell me if that doesn't sound like what we heard on that Scotland werewolf call
Oh,
recording.
yes.
It
It's
sounds like a
sobbing.
sobbing
Yeah.
sound.
It was a that's a disturbing recording, let me tell you.
It really is. And you definitely link to it on when you release this podcast because people need to hear it. I mean, that thing
Yes,
is,
yes.
and
I for those who are unaware, Clay and I and Recluse Steven Schneider were at Bray Road. And we played that, and we didn't physically see anything, but well, Clay's more psychically sensitive than I am, and you felt that there was definitely something happening. Is that
oh,
correct?
100%. Yeah, if you recall, I even sensed where the sightings were on
Oh,
Bray Road,
yes, absolutely.
and we went home that night and verified it. Yeah, and there's no qu I felt a presence when we played the call for sure. And you know, the weirdest thing about that call is like when I play that in nature, that I have gotten the weirdest animal responses that you can
Why?
imagine.
I
I've
bet they freak
had
out to that. Yes.
dog first of all, dogs go nuts, and I've had howls from creatures that I've never heard before. I think I have heard the howl of a mountain lion when I played it.
Wow.
Birds go crazy. It's I think they know what it is, or it's something so alien to them that they're freaked out.
It
But
strikes them as unnatural. Yeah.
yeah.
Neither
Yeah.
human nor animal, but somewhere in between. And that's
Yeah.
really unusual. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, those are pretty much the character. I mean, there's all kinds of variant characteristics, meaning ones that happen in one place but not in the other. But these are the common ones that I just meant. These are the ca common characteristics of lycanthropy that I mentioned.
So very interesting. I'm just thinking that one possible alternative explanation could be that those kind of appearances might correlate with having some Neanderthal DNA.
It could.
And,
It
you
could.
know, maybe that's a reason that some people were kind of looked at sideways because they weren't, I'm not saying they're not human. I've undoubtedly got some Neanderthal DNA. We're human, but not the same exact kind of human. And people may have kind of had some shunning going on there. That's just one idea.
That I can't deny that either. I mean, there's definitely look, I'll say this in a general sense. I think there's a lot about the Middle Ages that we don't know, and I would not be surprised at all if there were variants of humans and variants of hybrid creatures that were still alive in the Middle Ages.
I
That would
wouldn't
not
deny that.
surprise
That
me at
no,
all.
I'm same here. Same here. There's even some things I've read about dragons being real physical creatures in the medieval times, and that they eventually became extinct, but they may have existed in like the year 1000 or 1200, thereabouts.
That, you know what? It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it wouldn't, that would not be impossible to me at all.
No, no, especially because, there are creatures that are still seen to this day in the Congo that resemble dinosaurs, and you have Mayan gold statuettes of stegosauruses and other dinosaurs. So,
There's
there's a
something
lot
in
about
Thailand
the
too.
there's a lot about dinosaurs that they're definitely trying to cover up, and I think they could have been living much longer than we thought they were. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
And I mean, bats exist. I mean, there's no reason that we couldn't have a really large one, anyway, I digress. Where were we here?
Well, I went over so the causes or the characteristics of lycanthropy. I'll go over now the cures of
Oh, yes.
lycanthropy. This is very Middle Ages. I doubt this would be a cure, but opening up a vein with a cut and abstracting blood to the point of fainting, so basically bloodletting. Now this is really interesting. This is mentioned a couple times. Eating roses can stop a shift.
Now, this is if a person wants to stop this, or this is done to them to stop it.
Oh, it's done. If you eat roses in the middle of a shift, you'll turn to a human instantly, is what they say.
Oh, okay.
So cutting off a limb will stop a shift, and
It's a pretty extreme
it
loose
is
heart,
that
you know?
that's more if a werewolf's being hunted. But if you wanted to cure someone of lycanthropy, you would give them roses. So if you ever run into Dog Man and he's been shot by a hunter, just bring a petal, some dried rose petals, and it he should shift back to human form.
Wow. But he'll still be
So
shot. So he's like a shot human.
yes. But at least the hunter would then see that he shot a human, and hopefully get that human to the
Medical
hospital.
care, which is going to be a lot easier than bringing him to the vet, you know?
So here's now, this is going to get a bit off, a little bit off topic, but it's something
Oh,
I have to bring up.
yes,
So
yes.
I'm going to read this. I'm not going to preface it, because when I read this, this is another hair-raising moment in this book, and it blew my mind, and I'll get into what I think about this. So on page 164, they talk about a werewolf's blood. So it's talking about how to, some say at the backs of his front, the back, it's saying how to basically like stop a werewolf. Some say that if the backs of his front paws or hands are pierced, the spell is broken. So kind of what we talked about, cutting off a limb, but sometimes you can pierce the skin of the hand or foot, and it'll stop the lycanthropy. The blood which flows is black and thick, welling in great clotted gouts, sangue paso. So when I read this, the hairs on the back of my neck went up, and I thought instantly of these reports of the vaccine. And what's really interesting about this, I heard a show that Greg Carlwood did with somebody who is familiar with demonic possession and satanic ritual abuse, and she was saying that she thinks that part of the agenda of the vaccine is to inoculate humans with some kind of demonic possession, and that would not.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, look, with these people and how evil they are, that wouldn't surprise me. But what is really interesting to me is the just from a physical perspective, from a medical perspective, the body, right? The body is rejecting the vaccine through these blood clots for some reason, and the body seems to be rejecting lycanthropy in forming these thick clotted gouts. So it's unnatural to the human body. And that revelation to me was really interesting, that it had the same characteristics as what people are saying the vaccine is doing.
I
And
mean,
that one really blew my mind.
minority of people who've taken the vaccine have had those kind of effects. I mean, correct. I'm not saying that never happens. I'm saying a lot of people have taken it, and some people have had some bad reactions. I wouldn't, how common would you say that is?
Well, I mean, it's common enough to where there it's being reported by a large portion of the population. Certainly, it's not happening to everyone, but I don't know where you stand on the vaccine agenda, but I'm
I
someone
mean,
who definitely believes that there's ulterior motives behind it, and that what those ulterior motives are, I'm not exactly clear, but it's not for the good. That's kind of where I operate from.
and I'm not like, I don't mean to be this like a debate, that's not what I want to do here. I'll be honest, I'll self-disclose, I've had all the boosters, and I've been fine.
Well, that's great. Yeah, no, and
I'm not
I'm not,
saying nothing bad ever
yeah.
happened to anybody. I'm just saying my position is generally for, we're talking about the COVID vaccine, right? Not something else.
Yes, of course, of
I've
course.
generally been pro vaccine, but we can agree to disagree. That's not canon. I'm not imposing my opinion on you or vice versa, but that is an interesting allegation that, people who have a bad reaction, that's what happens. It's very interesting. Please.
It is interesting. And look, I'm not trying to get on the soapbox either. I mean, my view on the vaccine is it's a personal choice. I just don't like the agenda of forcing people to do it, and I think there's been some very adverse health reactions from it. But the interesting thing I want to point out is the clotted blood, and
Yeah,
how,
that's weird.
yeah, and how that one researcher on, I can't remember her name, on Greg Carlin's show was talking about, how this could be a vessel for some kind of mass demonic possession, which, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with that, but it's really interesting to parallel that with this description from the blood of a werewolf.
That is strange. Yeah, that is an odd thing. Yeah. Wow. Let's see, where were we here? Not eating animals killed by the wolf.
So the Catholic Church basically said there was a theory that you could get lycanthropy also from eating animals killed by a wolf or eating a wolf itself. So let me go to my notes
Which would be
on
kind of like
that.
rabies, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that very well could have been just rabies. Although I think they knew what rabies was
Oh,
at
yeah, I
the
would assume.
time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so an
It's a horrible
abbot,
way to die. Oh, God, it's
yeah,
very
oh,
bad.
that would be terrible. So an abbot of York forbid residents to eat an animal killed by the wolf. And this was around like 830 AD. There was thoughts that if you boiled the, well, it's weird. It was contradictory because one time it said in the book that if you cooked a wolf and ate it, you could shift into a wolf. And another time it said if you ate a boiled wolf, you could cure lycanthropy. So that was really interesting. I didn't mention that because of that contradiction, but that was
Yeah.
something that was kind of interesting.
Oh, that is.
One thing that would be really interesting to get into too, and this is really important, I think, is the werewolves in Greece and Rome.
Oh, please.
So as we discussed a little bit earlier, in Greece, so the nerve center, if you will, of lycanthropy was Arcadia. So Arcadia is where the Greek god Pan lived. And I think it was the area where King Lycoon lived as well. So basically, what happened with King Lycoon, this is where the word lycanthropy comes from. King Lycoon had Zeus over to dinner, and he wanted to see if Zeus was really divine. So
We're clear wrong.
Yeah, he killed one of his children and fed
That.
it to him in the form of a meal. And he said if Zeus was really divine, he would know what happened. So Zeus did figure it out, and he cursed him to walk the earth as a wolf forever. So that's it. Now, this is something that you don't always hear about, though, is that there was a, let's see, I'm going to my notes here. Okay, so Zeus takes a human disguise. There's another story where he takes a human disguise to expose King Lycaon, and it's eerily similar to the story of the angel in Sodom and Gomorrah
Oh,
in the
wow.
Bible. So let me read this. So
Yes,
this is
please.
on page 187. So, and it makes you wonder, like, and the question I would ask is Lycaon, another name for Loki, the god Loki, right? Because so many of these gods and kings and in these stories have similar names, and Loki is known as a wolf as well.
And as a chaotic evil being, you know.
Exactly. So the similarity is just it can't be by coincidence. So page 187. Okay. So, oh wait, that can't be right. Let's see. Oh, it's probably 87. Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay. All right, I do apologize. I
No,
did
no
not
problems.
get
Go
the
ahead.
page right. I'll have to look at this.
Sure, take your time. It's all right.
I'll figure it out. Yeah.
If I don't know if you want to continue to follow that particular thread or.
Yeah, no, I can talk about it.
Sure.
Basically, so Zeus posed as a human, and Lycaon in this version didn't even know he was there, and he saw Lycaon's evil, so he cursed him with werewolfism. It was a different variation.
Gotcha.
So and it's really interesting because it did dovetail with the Sodom and Gomorrah legend.
Entertaining
So
angels unaware type thing.
exactly. So
Yes.
yeah, but so there's that. The werewolves in Greece were also called Vrikolakis. And then Pan and Jupiter were called Lycia, Lycaei, because of their ability to turn man into wolf in Arcadia.
And Arcadia was full of shepherds, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Which is an interesting thing that just keeps coming up.
Yes.
Because shepherd's job is to protect the sheep, basically from wolves who eat the sheep. So it's interesting they turn into those. Yeah. It's just an interesting thing, you know?
It absolutely is. So here's another really interesting story. So on page 152, werewolves in certain parts of Greece could walk on fire without being harmed while human. So in the presence of vast throngs of men, certain families walked barefoot but without scathe or harm over the hot glowing embers of a huge fire of pine wood. These sorcerers who performed the feat were known as Herpes Sorani or Soranian wolves. And Pliny tells us that in consequence of this function, they were exempt. This is really important. They were exempted by a special decree of the Senate from military service taxation and any other sort of public service or duty. So actually, sorry, this is in Rome, not Greece.
Yes.
Because of Pliny.
Pliny is a really solid source. Yes.
Oh yeah. But so basically the Roman army is like, yeah, these guys are werewolves and we don't want any trouble. So we're not going to ask them to pay taxes or be part of the Roman military. Like, that's pretty crazy. And this is an area called Serrania, and there were sacrifices. The god of the mountain, whose native name was Serranius, but whom they called by the Greek name Apollo, a detail which is extremely significant as linking up the wolfmen of Soracte with the cult of Apollo. And it's a Greek word, aviklos, or something, the wolf. So basically there were sacrifices made on Mount Serranus, or to a god Serranus, the god of the mountain, which was interesting because there were supposedly sacrifices on Mount Lycaeus as well in Greece.
Wow. And when we say sacrifices, are we talking human sacrifices? Humans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're not talking a bull or something. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't want to get you off of your program, but
go ahead.
I do want to hear one. Now, this book came, that we've been referencing constantly, by Montague Summers, came out in 1933.
Yes.
And he mentions Vladimir Lenin, then ruler of the new Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
What does he say about him?
Well, he says that there was a church in England that was dedicated to the devil. And basically it was a church that was called like Lenin the Liberator or something. And wow. It was a Catholic church.
Which is amazing because Lenin, of course, as a communist, was an atheist.
Right. Yeah. And well, I think that's why he was labeled as the devil, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I thought like there's little fascinating tidbits on that in this book like that. Like, for instance, there was a passage that said it was okay to kick the shit out of somebody who you thought was a werewolf. Because you were, of course, right. And there was a case of like three characters in like Eastern Europe who had captured a woman who was a werewolf and beat her with sticks, and they were exonerated of charges. And they were charged like three times, but they were exonerated each time because it was done because of werewolves, you know, so it was done for the good.
It is so crazy. Oh man. Yep. And it was probably just a personal issue. I'm gonna out on a limb and suspect that she maybe wasn't a werewolf, you know.
Yeah.
Oh man. I want to make sure, because I think you're on a bit of a time schedule, aren't you, Clay?
Yes, I can probably go for another 10 minutes here.
Okay. Well, I want to make sure that whatever else happens, you have a chance to. There's something you'd like to announce?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I am starting my new podcast called Into the Ether with Clay Vandiver. It will be on Patreon for free, starting out for the first 3 to 6 months. And then once I get enough followers, and we'll start doing exclusive bonus content for subscription. My first episode will feature Recluse, and we will be talking about his book, Strange Tales of the Parapolitical. And then after that, we will do an episode doing a full deep dive into The Werewolf in Lore and Legend by Montague Summers with both Recluse and yourself. And we may bring in some other people as well on that one.
Cool. Can't wait for that, man.
Yeah. We'll do some more open heart surgery on that. One thing I want to mention before I go, here's two things. Number one, there was a werewolf outbreak in Bordeaux, France, late 1500s. In 1598, what was really interesting about that, there was also a werewolf outbreak in Constantinople in the mid 1500s. So it's really interesting the timing of this. Like, you have two separate cultures, one Muslim. I think Constantinople was still Muslim at the time.
I
If they.
believe that had been taken by then, yes. That
Oh,
had, yeah.
yeah. So, whether it was Muslim or not, it's still a world away.
Oh yes, it's either why
And
it's either that or Byzantine, so it's totally not
Byzantine, yeah. So
the
it's like,
same, yeah.
how is it that you had these outbreaks of werewolf, of lycanthropy or werewolfism in a span of 50 years, and that's by mere chance? You know what I mean? Like,
Exactly. And these are
so
documented. These are not just, campfire stories. These are
yes.
official documents of that government at the
Yeah.
time. These are official histories. These are, like
Yeah.
court records,
Oh,
And
yeah.
it's, that's not some made up BS that people just, it's not the tabloids. This is
No,
the
no.
official version, and they're saying this
Yeah.
happened. And people totally believe that that was exactly what was happening.
Yeah.
Literally,
Yeah.
physically, that was happening. So, I
Yeah.
mean, and people sometimes have the idea that our ancestors 500 years ago were like just all dumb or something. But no, they're at least as smart as us now. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I would say they're way smarter than we are now because,
Probably a
you
bit,
know,
yes.
most of their scholars knew six languages and they were learning algebra, like complex algebra, by the time they were 12. So I would say, at least
People
in
who could
the,
write things down were highly intelligent. Absolutely.
yes. So, okay. So if you don't mind, I did find that
Oh,
passage.
yes, please go
It
ahead.
was actually on page 137. It looked like an eight in the older English writing. So this is about Zeus. This is the parallel to Sodom and Gomorrah. In this, Nicholas Damascenus, in his history, tells us that Lycaon himself was righteous, but that th this is the other version, but that his sons were impious and profane. Sleeveless was his warning that Zeus, in the form of a stranger, every day assisted at the solemn sacrifice. In evil jest, they slew a child and mingled his members with the meat offered upon the altar, saying, "Let the god discern," whereupon consuming fire fell upon them from heaven. So eerily similar to the
Wow.
story of
Yes,
Sodom
it
and
is.
Gomorrah, but this time it's Zeus who's in disguise. And so the sons, and there's two, this is really interesting too, because when Lot went to Sodom and Gomorrah, there were two angels that approached him, right? Or two demons that approached him that tried to sodomize him or whatever the story was, right? And so you have two sons here. So it's very interesting that that story took place and it's eerily similar to Sodom and Gomorrah, but this time it has to do with lycanthropy.
That's a weird connection, and fire from the sky destroying them, and
Yeah.
wow,
Yeah.
and sacrificing a child, and there's so many threads that tie into different things there. That's wow,
Yeah, absolutely.
and it's a weird, yeah, you have the God of Israel doing this thing, and then you have Zeus doing this pretty similar thing,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
it's very interesting, yeah, that. Again, you don't have a legend all around the world about something that absolutely never happened,
Right,
okay?
right. There's just no way, especially with this many similarities as to the process and the origin and how it happens and what causes it and what you have to do to engage in it.
Yes, it's strikingly similar all around the world. And
Yep.
that is really fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Vincent, thanks so much for a great show, man. And I
Oh,
look
hell
forward
yeah.
to taking another deep dive with this on my podcast as well, and I hope your listeners can check it out. I'll let you know when the first episode is out, which should be out in a couple weeks. And I look forward to being on with you again
We're going to
on
see each other real
Monday,
soon, yes.
yeah, to talk about American Gods and hyperstition.
Yes.
That's going to be a really fun show on the farm. So
Yes. That's the Patreon Zoom party on Monday.
yep.
For Recluses, the Farm podcast. So if you're not a Patreon of Stephen Schneider, Recluse, The Farm, you should probably become one, because for the price of a Happy Meal, you can get some great content that is totally worth it. I don't get anything from it, so I'm plugging it just because I really love it, okay? Yeah. And I will be on it on Monday with Clay.
Awesome. Yeah, it's going to be awesome, man. Well, thanks for another great show, Vincent. It's always
a pleasure. Oh, so glad to have you, man.
You rock and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks a lot. Same to you, Clay. And I wish you all the best success with your podcast.
All right. Thanks, my brother. We'll talk to you Monday.
Yes. Folks, this has been The Weird Part. Clay Van Diver has been my special guest. Thank you for listening. Good night.